Okay, let's unpack this. We have a really unique set of documents in front of us.
Truly unique.
They detail how one American family, the Garners, just completely divorced themselves from standard public health guidance.
Right. They didn't just disagree.
Yeah.
They spent years building two very comprehensive non-governmental health protocols for themselves and their four kids.
And that's our mission for this deep dive.
Exactly. We're getting into the why, and I think more importantly, the really granular what behind their approach.
Which was highly organized.
Very. This family, it's Greg Garner, a healthcare IT business analyst,
yeah.
and Jackie Garner, a pediatric nurse practitioner. They built their own COVID playbook and a very detailed selective vaccine protocol.
And the key thing here, the thing that makes this so significant, is that their whole system is rooted in this systemic distrust of institutions.
Institutions like the CDC and the FDA, yeah. And it's all informed by their professional backgrounds.
And those professional backgrounds are absolutely essential to understanding this. I mean, we're talking about an analyst who spent a decade inside the, you know, the inner workings of hospital systems.
Specifically with big electronic health record systems.
Epic, Cerner, and he was dealing with the workflows. And on the other side, you have a clinician with frontline pediatric expertise.
So this isn't some theoretical thing. It's built on what they saw as insider insights.
Right. So in this deep dive, we're going to reveal the specific treatments, the supplements, the rules they adopted, and what does this all mean for you? You get a detailed look at a thoroughly researched alternative approach that was built entirely from the ground up.
And it was all fueled by this crisis of institutional confidence.
So to really understand their protocols, we have to start with that foundation, with the distrust.
We do. The documents are very explicit. They say that while, you know, the COVID mandates and the politicization of science were the final triggers.
The final nail in the coffin.
Pretty much. But the skepticism had been building for years. What's fascinating is how their insider knowledge, both the technical and the clinical, just compounded it.
They say watching the institutional response to COVID was a huge factor. They believe the CDC collapsed, but they trace the actual break, the moment trust died for them, back to a very specific day.
December 21st, 2017.
What happened on that day?
Well, on that date, they credit a doctor, who they just identify as Dr. Kolb in their notes, for really articulating concerns about the CDC's communication style, specifically around vaccine policy. He called it non-transparent and said it lacked open debate.
So it wasn't about the science itself. For them, it was about the communication.
Integrity of the communication channels, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That event became their symbolic moment trust died.
And that integrity issue ties right back to Greg Garner's job, right?
Right.
As an IT analyst.
Precisely. His experience in that EHR environment, you know, with Epic and Cerner handling every single patient data point.
He saw how the sausage was made.
He claims he saw how data could be, and I'm quoting here, manipulated, suppressed, or selectively reported.
And the claim is that it was to serve policy, not science.
Exactly. That the systems themselves were sometimes engineered to serve policy. And seeing that data engine from the inside just solidified their belief that they couldn't trust the institutional summaries.
They also bring up whistleblower narratives.
Oh, frequently.
Yeah.
They mentioned William Thompson specifically and the allegation that the CDC destroyed documents that linked the MMR vaccine to autism in certain subgroups.
All to protect the schedule.
Right. And that narrative of suppressed data, of cover-ups,
yeah.
It is absolutely central to why they felt they had to take total control. For them, it wasn't an emotional choice. It was a logical response to what they saw as systemic failure.
Which leads us directly to the solutions they built.
Starting with how they decided to manage acute illness.
Let's pivot to that first protocol then, the COVID playbook. They're very clear they created this by pulling information not from the CDC, but from voices they trusted.
People like Dr. Peter McCullough and RFK Jr.
And this is where you see their commitment to having a plan ready to go.
An aggressive day one plan. The documents detail their specific regimen for the very first day of symptoms.
Okay, so what's in it?
For immediate antiviral intervention, they list two main options. First is hydroxychloroquine, or HCQ, at 200 milligrams twice a day for 5 to 7 days, plus zinc.
And the other option.
Or ivermectin.
What if they couldn't get those right away? Did they have alternatives?
They did. Two readily available supplements, quercetin, or EGCG, which is that potent extract you find in green tea.
So those were like a bridge to get some antiviral properties going while they secured the prescriptions?
Exactly.
They also lean really heavily on high-dose vitamins. Yeah. Let's walk through those levels because they seem much higher than the standard recommendations.
They are. They prescribe themselves very substantial doses, vitamin D3 plus K2, somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 IU per day.
Wow, okay.
And vitamin C, dosed between 2 and 4 grams daily. The focus is clearly on just immediate, robust immune support to try and limit the severity right at the onset.
But the playbook goes beyond just that acute phase. It moves into detox and inflammation, which they credit to the McCullough protocol.
That's right. And this section introduces some more specialized supplements. For what they call spike detox and inflammation, they list key enzymes.
Things like nattokinase.
Nattokinase, which they see as critical for circulation. Also bromelain for inflammation and curcumin.
And I see they make a specific note to pair the curcumin with Bioprene. Why that detail?
Well, that detail really speaks to how deep their research went. Curcumin on its own has pretty poor bioavailability.
Meaning your body doesn't absorb it well.
Right. But Bioprene, which is just a black pepper extract, massively increases the absorption, so they're ensuring they get the maximum anti-inflammatory effect.
They also list other things like melatonin, Pepcid.
Famotidine, yeah. And aspirin, if it was safe for the person. All of that on top of a general anti-inflammatory diet.
What's really remarkable to me, though, is the practical side, how they plan to actually get these things.
They're self-sufficiency measures, yeah. It's one thing to have a list, it's another to have an access plan.
So for anyone in Tennessee, for instance.
They detailed how to access ivermectin without a prescription using a state law,
yeah.
SB 2188, a standing order law. And they even included a specific telehealth option, a $50 consultation with a Dr. Michelle Scott to get prescriptions for HCQ or ivermectin.
So they found these independent channels completely outside the conventional system.
That was the whole point.
Yeah.
But, and this is critical, they built in a fail-safe.
A very important one.
Absolutely. Despite all the emphasis on early home treatment, they had a non-negotiable list of red flag symptoms.
Things that meant go to the ER immediately.
Immediately. Things like oxygen saturation dropping below 92%, severe chest pain, sudden shortness of breath, confusion. It shows that their model of health sovereignty still recognized the absolute need for high-level acute care when certain lines are crossed.
Okay, let's shift gears now to their long-term strategy, the selective vaccine protocol.
And their philosophy here is crystal clear. It's defined by four principles: selective, delayed, titer guided, and zero CDC.
They also make a point to say this isn't anti-vaccine.
No, they frame it as pro-informed and pro-sovereignty.
So if we look at the specific rules they follow, based on their trusted doctors, Kalb and Dundon, what do we see?
You see a very deliberate attempt to reduce what they see as immune burden and control exactly what's in the injection. Their spacing rules are strict.
Like what?
Never more than one injected vaccine per visit, ever. A minimum of 3 months between any shots. And crucially, only accepting single-dose vials.
Let's pause on that one. The single-dose vial, they say it's to avoid Timorosal, but is there more to it?
I think so, yes. It's part of that larger philosophy of just minimizing unnecessary components. While Timorosal is the famous concern, single-dose vials just inherently have fewer additives overall.
It's about purity.
It's about maximum purity and controlling exactly what goes into their children's bodies. It reflects that deep concern over cumulative exposure.
And they also had a definitive list of vaccines they just never give.
Right. That list includes Hep B, HPV, rotavirus, RSV, flu, COVID, and varicella.
And their reasons?
Very specific. Hep B is a lifestyle disease, not for a newborn. Rotavirus and varicella chickenpox are low-severity illnesses, better handled by natural immunity, in their view. And they saw the flu, COVID, and RSV vaccines as just ineffective or unnecessary for their kids.
The biggest change, though, the most traumatic one, was to the MMR vaccine.
Oh, absolutely. That's the most sensitive part of the schedule for many.
And they explicitly align with RFK Jr.'s viewpoint on this.
They do. If you break up the MMR, their non-negotiable rule is no combo MMR before age 3 ever. They push that first dose all the way from the CDC's 1 year recommendation out to 3 or 4 years old.
And how do they manage that delay? What gives them the confidence to wait?
Their final core principle, titer guiding.
So testing for antibodies.
Exactly. They use specific antibody titer tests. They even list a LabCorp panel number before giving any MMR component or any booster. They believe that over 70% of kids are already immune after a natural exposure or a single dose, making more shots unnecessary.
But the titer test gives them data.
Verifiable data, which is their whole ethos. They favor measurable science over just following a programmatic mandate. They test instead of guess.
So if they have these two massive comprehensive protocols, one for getting sick, one for staying well, what do they see as their number one single most powerful defense strategy?
The sources give a very definitive answer, and it's purely biological.
Available to the mother.
It's breastfeeding.
Now, heavily do they weigh that?
Its position is paramount, more important than anything else. Their document has a direct quote that says, "Breastfeed as much as possible, ideally 4+ years. This is the #WonderPreventive you can do. Nothing builds immunity like mother's milk."
So, in their view, that innate protection is just superior to any vaccine schedule.
Superior to any schedule or mandate. It's the ultimate foundational defense.
And they wrap it up by summarizing their claimed results.
They do. They state they have raised 4 healthy, selectively vaccinated kids, all breastfed for years, and the outcome is no autism, no chronic illness, no regrets.
So we've just completed a deep dive into an extraordinary case study in what they call health sovereignty.
It's an approach that was really driven by a confluence of things insider experience with data systems, clinical knowledge, and just a deep skepticism of institutional transparency.
And the result is two comprehensive, internally consistent alternative protocols.
Supported by both clinical and IT insight.
I think the core takeaway here is that for this particular family, the pursuit of reliable knowledge meant systematically prioritizing whistleblowers and independent experts over the very institutions they once worked within. And this raises a really important question for you, the listener, to think about. If that fundamental trust in traditional health institutions collapses, does the need for independent, data-driven medical strategies sourced from non-governmental and, yes, sometimes controversial voices, does that become the new standard for families who are seeking sovereign control over their health?